Good afternoon, St. Louis. DJS on Camo X. Happy Monday. A few minutes past 1 p.m. It's when you're playing that song, Rage. I was just at MoBap with my mom this morning, and she was getting a little rest, little shut-eye, and this incredibly effervescent young woman comes in, and she is the music therapist. And so she is there to cull out my mom's musical taste so that she can come back and sing for her and all that kind of stuff. And so my mom is just like barely awake and just, you know, trying to, what? And she's like, well, and she's super, super loud, which I've noticed people who work in hospitals tend to speak very, very loudly because people are hard of hearing. And so she's yelling and I'm trying to translate. And she asks my mom, well, what's your favorite decade of music? And my mom, without hesitation, says, the 80s.
That's awesome.
And I say, she means the 1880s. So, evidently, my mom's a real closet Prince fan.
What would you have done if she had said Billy Squire?
I mean,
he would have been like, finally, yes!
I was like, she's like, what's your favorite decade? I'm all ears. I'm like, let's hear this one. And she goes, she said the 80s. And I made my little jokey joke. And then the girl goes, do you mean like the 50s? And my mom gave her, my mom has a look that wilted her. And I think she's probably 40% less effervescent right now. Quick update, because I've been getting so many emails from listeners. Thank you. That's so cool of you. So my mom had the surgery. Turns out her hip was worse than they thought. She had to have a rod put in from her hip to her femur, which just... I didn't even have that done. I feel like I need to be in the hospital for a couple of days just from hearing it. And I don't know if any of you have ever had an elderly person go under general anesthetic, but a lot of times they will tell you that they don't come out quite the same. Mm. And my mom had that kind of weekend. The weekend was pretty brutal, and she was very agitated and very conspiratorial and didn't know where she was and things like that. And then yesterday when I went in, she was quiet and she was tired and still confused. She's known who I am every time, knows who she is, but still kind of living in her own world. So if you'll recall, she was in the hospital in Illinois and we got a placement for a rehab. And within 2 hours, she had fallen and broken her hip. Not impressed. And the number one place I wanted her to go to did not have a bed back then. And now they do. So she's moving today. I'm going to scoot out of here about 4:30 or so and go do all the prep stuff. So fingers crossed, everybody, that it goes a lot better than the last time. Couple shout outs. Last week, I shouted out Melissa and Kim, and it should have been Melissa and Dee because Kim was one of my nurses, my mom's nurses. And then Dee is a nurse, but she is in the social work caregivers that help you to figure out where the next place goes. And I was on the phone with them today. And so to Dee and Melissa, thank you for everything. And then Maxine has been her main nurse, and my mom has been in a place where she likes nobody and she loves Maxine. So that really tells you a lot about how sweet Maxine has been to my mom and how, like, we were working together to get my mom. My mom can't take big pills, which that's one thing I commiserate with. I have a hard time with that too. And so we're smashing them up and putting them in stuff. And we're just like, I bet we spent 2 hours just right next to each other trying to get the applesauce, a little this. And I brought up to my mom and made her laugh because I've told the story many times when I was a kid. I grew up in the era where you finished everything on your plate before you went out and played, and applesauce was like my Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. And my mom and dad would just keep putting cinnamon on it, which just made it into some sort of paste that they use for the pyramids. And and she's like, no more applesauce. I'm like, I knew the day would come. I bided my time.
I've been waiting.
It took 55 years, but I finally...
It is gross, even though, you're score. Right.
So, but yeah, we've been getting a whole bunch of email from people giving advice, which I appreciate, and I'm listening to, and so yeah. But it was most, like I talked about it. It's like a club that you join. You know, when you lose a parent, or God forbid, you lose a child, or you know. But this is one of those clubs that when you spend an extended amount of time in facilities, like time. goes weird for the loved ones, you know, for the people who are there in the waiting room, then back in the room, then the waiting room, then back in the room. And you can only imagine being the 97-year-old who's been in three places now, many more than that when you count, like, operating room, emergency room, and says something like, I know this is a conspiracy, and you're like, I promise it's not. Then you're like, but I see why you think it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a real thing. I know you went through it, Wheels, with your father-in-law.
Yeah. I mean, even to a degree with my mom during the open heart and all that, she was not, she wasn't having any issues that were similar to dementia, but, you know, while she was medicated and while she had a, you know, breathing tube in, you know, for what was it, like 24 hours after the open heart, like there was a lot of not sure of what's going on or weird looks like what's happening. So, yeah, I mean, when you're spending a lot of time around all of that, I can see, I mean, it gets tough. It gets confusing for people that are just there, like you said. Like, it gets to be a lot. Like, what
Days
room are we going
to
now?
To together,
what time? When's the procedure? Like, all of those things. And then you mix it all up together and you're like, with the stress.
Yeah.
And imagine the stress for the person that's actually laying in the bed.
And also the bedside manner you're talking about with the people you mentioned, how important that actually is. Because when you're in a situation like that, you can kind of feel like you are just there occupying space, and you don't really matter to them in a way. Like it's almost like they just have to fill the room. Yeah. They got to fill the room and put somebody in that bed because that's money for the hospital. So it's really comforting when people who come in act like you're the only thing that matters in that moment because it is so stressful for everybody. So to have that bedside manner makes a massive difference.
Yeah, I can't say enough good things about MoBAP. That's where Phoebe was born. So it's like, you know, you have a special little happy memory in your heart for that. But yeah, they were wonderful.
Good to know.
What else has been going on?
Dave's like, I haven't seen anything.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's true.
It's the weirdest thing. Yeah. You come out of a hospital waiting room. There was a time where a close family member was in the ICU. So, two, 3 days go by, and you just feel completely removed as if it's been a century since you've done anything routine.
Yeah.
It's just, the whole world stops. That's how it feels.
Yeah. I literally, like, at one point, went home, turned on the television, and I see rockets flying.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, Iran has launched hundreds of rockets. And I'm just like, okay. All right.
Right.
If that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
You definitely feel like you're missing literally everything else.
Yeah.
Even with a phone in your pocket, because it's just too much.
Yeah, true. Thank God for Rach. Rach is like, you know, we been working together now for so long, and she's like, let's get you outside. Let's just get you outside. And so we went out for a walk. We went to get coffee at our place downstairs, right where we're regulars. But there's the one guy who we see less, you know, it's the skinny guy. Like, I don't know him by name. And I get up there and I forget what I order. And I said, to Rach, tell him what I want.
Like, I want my usual, but I don't remember what that is.
And so without missing a beat, Rach is like, he'll have an almond milk latte, double hot, double shot, with a little bit of vanilla. And I just stood there, like Curious George holding onto the hand of the man with the yellow hat.
That's our vibe.
He was like, he's like, this lady comes in with her dad who clearly isn't all there. And it's the sweetest thing because she shows him the art and she tells him what he wants in his coffee. And quite often he buys art.
That is awesome.
Had she not been there, I could have been there for minutes.
But you eventually just said, make something up for me.
Yeah.
Sir, what can I get you? Uh-huh.
That's right. Yeah.
He's like, Todd knows my order, but Todd's not here.
Yeah, can you just text Todd to see?
Honestly, I wasn't prepared for Todd not to be here.
Right. I start by introducing myself. I'll tell you what you really, really treasure, though, is when a hospital has a good cafeteria.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
You know?
And comfortable chairs in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's a big one.
That's a huge one.
Yeah. Yeah. We ended up for my mom's surgery at the University of Florida's hospital in Gainesville. And it's like first rate everything. They had a bunch of different cafeterias. And you're right. Like being able to go eat something somewhat normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then like they had a little fold out bed in the room where my dad was sleeping most of the time and all that. It's you don't even things you don't even think of.
Yeah.
Like until you're in that moment and you're like, I could really use this, and they're like, oh, by the way, that folds out. That's a bed you can lay there.
My mom's been wanting some like protein drinks, you know.
Oh yeah.
Because they have Ensure.
Yeah.
But she doesn't like Ensure.
Oh, it's a different kind.
She likes Boost.
Okay.
So I bought her Boost,
mm-hmm.
and I bring it in today like I'm bringing in my newborn baby to show her.
Look what I got.
She's going to think I'm such a good boy, and she's like, I don't like chocolate.
Oh,
oh
no.
Oh. Okie
dokie. Dang it.
I'm just going to drink this 12-pack in my car.
Yeah. You can still drink it. Just protein.
Yeah, get a little protein in me.
Wait a minute. Who doesn't like chocolate?
My mom.
Wow.
I don't know.
Is this new?
That's weird, isn't it? You would think after 59 years together, I would know that. But, yeah, at least she doesn't like chocolate doughs. Maybe she likes chocolate other things.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wild. Yeah.
Just because we were talking about hospitals, I've been thinking about this since yesterday because I can't tell if I'm a horrible person. But Scottie Scheffler won the Masters.
Yeah.
His wife is very, very pregnant, 9 months pregnant with their first child. And she was due any day during the Masters. And Ron said he had said, like, if she goes into labor, even if he's ahead in the Masters, he would go. And I'm thinking, no, you may never get this chance to be in the lead of the Masters going into the final round. Like, you can have another baby.
You can have another
go make another baby.
That's
but, like,
true.
You can't guarantee Dan Marino, right? Rookie goes to the Super Bowl, never goes back after his rookie
year. Except that Scheffler had already won one.
He did, but it's still the Masters.
And they play it every year.
Am I wrong? Would you leave?
I would leave in a heartbeat, yeah.
Would you really?
100%.
Yeah, I'm with you, Amy.
100%.
Is this because we
she'll
don't
say,
have kids?
Hey,
yes, I think it is.
Nah, she'll figure it out.
Do you agree with me, Dave?
Boy, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I like my kids a lot. But
and it's 3.6 mil.
I mean, see, this is the problem. We think of these, because this came up with Phil Mickelson like 25, 30 years ago. It was a big sports talk. Like, I can't believe what it was he would leave. I'm like, guys, he plays in these things every weekend. He's going to be playing golf for the rest of his life. He's going to play probably 20 more Masters the rest of his life. It's not like you know you're going to win.
At the time, you don't know you're going to win.
You could collapse on Sunday and finish 18th and be the most negative story in the history of all Masters stories.
But then also you could collapse and never play golf again.
But let's say it's Sunday.
You'll never have your first child again.
It's Sunday.
It's not like you're not going to be in the kid's life.
Yeah.
Like, again, if I'm not there for the birdie, you'll never see me.
What if she's not high risk, right? No high risk. She's healthy. And then let's say, okay, is it because it's his first kid? I mean, because, like, we, you know, homeschool, big families. Some of these families have, like, 10 kids. Certainly you wouldn't miss the Masters for your eighth kid.
What are you saying to your eighth kid? Yeah, you're not as important as my golf round.
You're four strokes ahead on Sunday at the Masters, 15th hole. Your phone rings. You don't think that caddy throws the phone into the water
Listen,
hazard?
At that point, you're not, like, you can finish. You're literally, like, a half an hour from being done.
So you'd be cool with it, though, if it was Mason Jar, hey, it's Costco sample day.
We had this conversation.
Make it about work. If he said, I'm not going to leave work, I'm not going to take the day off work today because our kid is being born. I'm going
to work.
Different.
It's totally different.
No, it's not.
Yeah, because tomorrow's going to be the same as today for our job.
We're looking at this as people that don't do that every day for a living their entire lives.
Yeah, but even at the Masters, they're not like, oh, what's the green jacket? It's just like going to work.
No, but he's
going to
do it again and again and again and again and again.
Anything can happen.
Ask Tiger.
Quickly.
I don't know. I get where Amy and Chris are coming from because, I mean, think of all the children that were born, you know, back in the day and the dads weren't even allowed in the delivery room. You could kind of justify it by that. That being said, if it were my husband, I'd be like, you got to leave. You got to be here.
You got to be there.
Yeah. I would like to think.
That's the other part of it, too, is, yes, it's the child and it is also your partner. And if your partner is saying, this is really important to me for you to be there, how does that not matter to you?
I would like to think that my partner would be supportive of me zeroing in on the greatest possible achievement that I can do
that you've already done.
Towards, shut up. My entire life, I think that my partner would say, yeah, you can come see it an hour later. It's
and
fine.
If she said that, that's great.
Whatever
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
We're talking to the perfect group of people about this topic.
I'm in labor for 30 hours, and they're like, hour 24, and then my husband comes back, and they're like, wait, you were four strokes ahead of the Masters, and you... Oh my gosh, now I have to give birth. I'm like, well, your dad quit the Masters.
What if, I got one, what if he's in the Masters, but he's in like 12th place?
Oh, then he can come
then
home.
But, go,
he, but he insists on staying.
Well, then we're serving him papers it's as the 18th.
Oh, I see, so we're on a grading scale. Now, we're on a sliding scale now, yeah.
Right on the other side of the bottom of the hour break, I have sort of one of my existential questions for everyone. I think it's a pretty good one, though, and timely. This is a throwaway, but last night I was watching one of my alien shows. And,
which one?
What was that one? This one is called UFO Witness.
Okay.
And a guy has an alien implant in his leg. Fine. You know, I know what I'm doing. And so I'm watching this. I'm like half watching it and half sort of in and out and just trying to relax. And at one point, the narrator says, while much is unknown about alien implants. Really?
Yeah. Who's the doctor? It's a foot doctor, right? That he gets all the patients and he's the one that's been taking them out and collecting these little metallic things that nobody can figure out why they're in where they're in.
Boy, I should be dating you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know everything.
I've seen all of these things.
Yeah,
I don't know what I don't draw.
I just like that they say things like that. Like,
yeah, like no,
we're going to be completely honest. There's a couple things.
We don't know.
There's one or two unknowns about the secret foot microchips.
When there's a caption of a picture and it's like a vet and then standing next to a monkey and it's like Dr. Smith. Left.
Yeah. Those voiceover guys sometimes must have to be like, really? Oh, yeah. I have to read this. Right. So they have to be super serious about the most wild ass thing.
There's a foot doctor removing these metal objects from feet.
Yes, absolutely.
Do the patients
but they're not just metal objects. They say that they are implants from aliens. He's saying that.
So do they actually see him remove it, or is it like a, hey, I found a quarter behind your ear? You know, like, oh, look what I found in your foot.
He's like, beep, beep,
I found this thing.
He's actually filmed the procedures of, like, taking the thingy out.
It's AI.
What is the thingy?
So they're different, but there are a couple of them. They're just, like, little, like, egg-shaped, tiny little metallic egg-shaped things, and they can't figure out, like...
Yeah.
It gives off some kind of electromagnetic signal, but they can't understand why or what's powering it. It's too small to have a battery.
It's a tracker.
It's weird. I don't know what it is. They could all be making it up. I'm just telling you, that's what the guy's doing.
Are the aliens foot guys? Well, like, why the foot?
Oh.
Why is there no better place than that seems like the worst place for it.
Well, some of them aren't in the foot. He just happens to be a foot doctor. His name is Roger Lear.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Should get him on the show.
So he's a foot doctor who's, like, chopping into people's, like, arms and stuff, and they're letting him.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you could take something out of a foot, you sure wouldn't want him taking it out of your arm.
Well, I'm asking, how's he getting up to the arm? If he's a foot doctor.
No, listen. You have to understand. He's a foot doctor, but listen. His separate thing is he loves the alien stuff, so when people have these things, they come to him.
Oh, so yes. Somebody comes to him and says, Doc, I think there's an egg in my brain.
Yes, exactly right.
And he's like, snip, snip.
That's exactly the way it is. And it is crazy as hell, but that's what it is.
If your husband's in the finals of the Masters?
Oh, Roger Lear is dead, by the way.
But he has an alien implant in his calf.
Yeah.
And Roger Lear happens to have an opening.
I know a vet that'll take that out.
135 DGS. Okay, so I have a topic. I'm... warning you that I'm not going to roll it out articulately, but I think you'll understand what I'm getting at. So in my little window over the weekend, taking care of my mom, where I was able to watch some television, of course it strikes you, especially when you're just getting a nugget and you're used to living and breathing it all the time. And it was such a distasteful nugget. It was just all MAGA versus everybody and Israel versus Iran and the U.S. and we're going to shoot down the rockets, but we're not going to take part in an actual attack. And it's just all about power. It's all about individual human beings having power, wanting power, being willing to lie, cheat, steal, kill, attack, bomb, kidnap, rape, anything at all to get power. Okay? As you grow up, you don't have to be 59. You can be Rachel's age, Andrew's age. When you grow up into a grown person, you realize, okay. So all those things I learned about being nice and being courteous and being professional, it gets me some stuff, but not as much as those guys, the ones who don't care about that, and they just want to be successful, and they want their name on the door, and they behave in ways that sometimes are completely fraudulent and criminal, but other times they're just aggressive. So the nice guy finishing last kind of thing is sort of what's on my mind. So my question, and I was thinking of you, so I'll give you the first shot at it here, and it's unfair to you because you're my religious friend who I respect and we have good conversations about it, whether you're religious or you're an atheist. Is it time to augment the way we teach kids? Do we just keep teaching them the old, like, you want to be nice and you want to play fair and you wanted this and you wanted that, just knowing that they're going to reach a point in their life where they go, seems like the other guys are doing better than me.
That is
one more thing. Yeah. Is it just so innately human to be manipulative and power hungry, but we can't stomach teaching our kids that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you do. We grew up knowing it's human nature to be power hungry, to be rebellious, want to be in charge. So I guess the first thing is that question, you know, why do the evil prosper? That was something King David said over and over again and lamented in the Psalms. But then even when you look back at, you know, if you want to go back, this is just from a faith perspective, since you asked me, Adam and Eve in the garden, you know, the first sin was that they wanted to be like God. Do we really have to obey this command not to eat from this tree? We would be like God. We would have the knowledge of good and evil. And so, yeah, I think power, wanting to kind of rebel against authority, wanted to make ourselves God in one way or another, is something that's innately human. And I don't think it's wrong to teach kids that, like, hey, this is what you have to look out for, but this is also why it's good to follow in this way. And as you know, again, faith, the Bible would say train a child in the way they should go, because ultimately, if you believe that truth and goodness will win out, then that's what you strive for. But the world tells you that power, money, sex, all of that will make you happy. And if anyone has seen Back to the Future 2, Biff's world is super depressing.
Wow, the Bible and Back to the Future 2.
I'm like, really? That's our. I thought she was going to say, if you were to look at how unhappy Elon Musk seems, but
as it is written.
Nope, let's talk about Biff.
Biff got what everybody wants: money, power, knowledge. You know.
Yeah, but he didn't get the girl.
Marty McFly's mom.
In the book of Johnny Quest.
Marty McFly's mom.
But Brian, I mean, you seem like you have something on your mind.
No, I actually agree with Amy for the most part. I think it's, look, kids, as they become adults, they're going to figure it out. You can tell them, look, be as good of a person as you can possibly be, but not everything is going to work out in your favor, and not everybody is going to be nice in return to you all the time. But we can instill it in kids as best as we try, and just hope as much of it sticks as possible. I think it's that simple. Just teach as many kids growing up to be good people and hope that more often than not, a kid grows up to continue to be a good person.
And what does success mean? Because if you define success just by money, how much money in your bank account, then of course you can be unscrupulous and cruel and do what you need to do to get that success. But, you know, even in our household, there's different types of success. What is a successful life to you? And it's who you are as a person, your character, people that you've touched, you know, reached out to, had relationships with, how you help people. That, you know, that ultimately who you are as a person, your character, means more than what's in your bank account.
Wheels?
Yeah, I think you have to start with the base, which is, where do you want the vast majority of people to end up, right? we're better off with more people that think being good is the right way. But I think part of the reason we are what we are is that a lot of us weren't that way. It's how we beat out our competitors thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. So that part of, I think there's a part of it that's wired into us. Not everyone. I think every human's brain is different, but there's part of us that wants to dominate, and that's how we survive. That's how our species is the dominant species on the planet. But as our at our current state, if everyone's like that, it's not good. It's war. It's fighting nonstop. And it's better now if the majority of people are good and understand that we're actually better when we work together rather than when we try to beat each other up all the time.
Well, and that's the thing is that there are probably a lot of parents, and I don't have numbers on this, but I imagine there are quite a few parents that that's what they teach their kids. That you win at all costs, whatever winning looks like to you, whether it's money or some sort of power. That's what they teach their kids. That nothing's ever going to be handed to you, kid, so you don't have to be a good person. I imagine there are a lot of parents that that's the message they instill.
Well, yeah, and again, you know, if you're getting into faith and how in the U.S., I think we take a lot of quote unquote truths for granted, like be a good person. Well, in other cultures, being a good person means very different things, right? And honor and character mean very different things. And you could say, well, that's murder. Well, we don't have the same definition in murder here as we do in Iran.
To that point, I was thinking, because I always think of Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un and people like that, that how do they deal with being the bad guy? And then I realized they probably don't think they're the bad guy.
No, in their minds, they're the hero.
Well, I think of women in Iran who suffer honor killings. Those men think they're doing the right thing in the eyes of God. And that's why we take so much for granted, especially just that Western civilization culture takes so much for granted. And I will say, too, even if you look at an evolutionary point of view, this all idea of being a good person, of having compassion for the weak, is very counterintuitive to the survival of the race. And it's one reason why Nietzsche, like, he hated that about Christians. He hated that that's why there's a, like, whether it's the Red Cross or hospitals so associated with Christianity, the first hospitals were from the Christian faith, like 343 or something like that. At any rate, Nietzsche's like, well, this is helping the
weak.
Waste
of time.
This is a waste of time, helping the weak and the hurting and those in our human species who are holding us back. I mean, it's the idea of having compassion and kindness is actually counter to that survival of humanity.
Well, it to a degree, though. But then the problem is if we don't do that, we turn that on each other. Right? I mean, if we have that. That,
well, I'm talking about like the weak, like what Nietzsche.
No, but I understand that. But I said, but let's say you get to the point, you follow his line of thinking and you just forget them. They go by the wayside. Well, you're going to then turn that aggression on your fellow, quote unquote, aggressives. Mm-hmm. Like we are. That's why we need to have a majority that is not like that. Yeah. Otherwise, it's nothing but fighting all the time.
So, Rach, you have your choice. You can jump in on the Bible. You can jump in on Nietzsche. You can jump in on Back to the Future 2.
Give us the biff.
Yeah.
Don't you think that most people, though, like they have, because you're asking, like, why do we teach our kids this? You have a child, and that is your chance to create something new in this world. And most people see their little baby, and they see goodness.
Yeah.
And so no one wants to raise a malicious, self-centered, you know, like cutthroat kid.
I know that like Succession is not a documentary, but there are a lot of people in the world who live like that. Do you think they just view it different? Like every new baby, they're like, here's another winner. Here's another killer right here. We're going to teach them the way the world really works.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think if you're a person that is like a Logan Roy from Succession, you just don't have like, again, it's not a documentary, but you just don't have those normal emotions that other people and affection that people have towards your children. You're probably seeing them more as tools, or you've been hurt and wounded so badly in your life that you think that they need to build up the same kind of armor that you experienced in the past. But I think most people choose to raise their children as, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, because they just see the sweetness and the innocence in their child, and they want to, you know, preserve that for as long as possible.
Yeah, I think there's a small percentage of people that were like what Ron just talking about, but I don't think they start them that way. I think as they get older, they push them that way where, listen, it's you against the world. The problem with more people doing that, I think a lot of us, I looked at it this way and I still do, if I'm teaching my kid to be that way, I'm teaching my kid also that they're going to be a target and that people are going to come after them because people don't like that person, right? Nobody likes the person that will step on everyone else. So when people don't like you, you are a target at some point. Now, maybe if your parents are billionaires and you've got all the advantages in the world, that doesn't matter. But if you're a normie, it matters, and it matters a lot. And 99.8% of people are normies. And part of getting along in the world is being liked, is being accepted, is being in groups. It doesn't have to be the same group or everyone. But if you're that person that clearly is just out for themselves and throwing everybody else to the wolves,
yeah,
nobody likes you. And you're going to have a harder time as a normie getting along in the world.
Yeah. 152 DGS. Andrew did a good job over the weekend. We didn't talk a whole lot, but he was anticipating what was going to happen today. And he has Jim Talent, who can talk to us about Israel and Iran and China and everything else. He'll be on at the top of the hour, 2 o'clock. Before we lose all of our players, let's talk about the Cardinals over the weekend. Wheels, thoughts?
Well, Friday started like it was going to be a better weekend, and then no runs came on Saturday or Sunday. So we're still basically where we were 3 days ago. They're not hitting enough. And it starts with Goldschmidt and Arenado, and it continues with the young guys because Walker's not hitting. I hate putting it this way, but I mean, Victor Scott is overmatched. He's not getting anything done at the plate. And I know they have him there for defense, but at some point when the offense is struggling, they're going to have to make a call. It's just not ready. That's all it is. He's, I mean, 5 for 57. He's not walking and he's striking out a lot. I mean, it's hard.
Which is not shocking.
No.
Because he flew through the minor leagues and he's facing big boy MLB pitchers.
You've seen this, Ronge, a million times. I mean, Mike Trout had to go back down to the minor leagues when he first came up. Like, there have been great, great, great players that come up the first time and it's like, well, he's not ready and it's time to go back. And some people, that's when they're 19 or 20. Some people, it's when they're 23, 24. No two careers are alike. It doesn't mean anything big picture. It just means that right now it's too much.
Yeah, and it doesn't always work that a guy who has a terrific spring training is going to translate. And a lot of times it doesn't. I would say most of the time it doesn't work. You have the Albert outlier.
Right.
That, I mean, that does happen. And I know you get enamored with a guy who over a month is just crushing spring training pitching, which is.
And had a good year last year, all that too.
Yeah.
Right?
And I know they wanted to roll with it and. Sometimes you have to reward that player, too. If you're looking to fill a roster and a guy's proven it during spring, you know, it makes sense to give him a shot. But it at this point is just not
working.
Let's
also keep in mind that this was not what the team wanted.
Yeah.
Three outfielders got hurt, right?
Is Nootbaar being back enough for him to go back down?
Right now, no, because they didn't do that. But maybe in the not-too-distant future. But the reason he made the team was that three outfielders were opening the year hurt. Tommy Edman was not ready to play. Dylan Carlson got hurt. Was it the last or second to last spring training game? And then obviously Nootbaar was down with the oblique injury. So if one of those hadn't happened, he might not have made the team.
Right.
And it's not a knock on the guy, but when you're early and you're struggling really badly,
how about when
he's fine. I mean, and not hitting for a lot of power, but he's competitive. And if Scott were that, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. But Mason Winn is in a spot where you can live completely with what he's doing because he's giving you great defense. He brings speed, but he's hitting enough where you're like, yep, okay, that'll work.
Why am I so mad at Pallante?
Well, I don't know, because he gave it up.
Yeah.
I mean, none of those runs were his, but he came in and gave up three hits. So, yeah, I can understand that. But the truth is that, I mean, they went two games and didn't score.
I mean,
Miles Michaelis wasn't great yesterday. Gave up a bunch of runs. Didn't matter. You didn't score any runs. So, you know, I think the offense is the number one thing that's got to get fixed. Once that gets fixed, and again, we're not at the point now where it's like, boy, I'm really worried.
Yeah.
But we're only about 2 or 3 weeks away from that time where you're like, okay, it's more than a month now. That's worrisome.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.